I'll call the meeting to order for telecommunications.
The meeting is to call to order here. We have a quorum. Representative Hoppe moves the minutes.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved. The motion passes, the minutes are approved. Members, it's good to be back here together this morning again. I just want to go over briefly what the purpose of the meeting is and why we're together today, just so everyone's on the same page. And we are going to be ending promptly at 9:30. PFL Caucus is going to be reviewing some important information, apparently, so we will be ending promptly at 9:30 today. And we will be meeting again next week. The purpose of the meeting today is largely to acknowledge that there is a state cable TV franchising bill soon to be formally introduced. I think most people are aware of that. It'll likely be introduced on Wednesday. There is a bill summary, I guess, here available that our great staff, Mr. Eliff, has put together that overviews the draft bill that was introduced. That is publicly available. Today we're going to then begin the discussion, begin setting the stage for the major issues surrounding cable TV franchising. And if you haven't had a chance to review the work done by our analyst, Mr. Eliff, I recommend you do so. You can find it on our house website, and I think it also is available up front today and in the members' packets. So this is a great background. Yes. It is very well written and very, very easy to understand.
I think it's an iambic pentameter.
Very good. So this is kind of the stage that we're moving forward with. Today we will not be examining the bill as such, more so giving interested parties an opportunity to talk about, again, just the context, the framework, and the major issues. And if you look at the information that Mr. Eliff has set forth, some of the big ones are franchise fees, PEG support fees, build-out requirements, municipal services, PEG channel requirements. All these are issues that I think we'll have a chance to look at. Next week we'll begin looking probably a little bit more directly at the Quest bill and see what the folks have to say about that. At least they're the ones that have put it together at this point. The plan is to move the bill next week to Labor and Commerce Committee, and it's going to stay there until next year, and then we're going to take it up again in this very committee to see where it goes from there. So it'll be re-referred back down. So that's the general plan. And then over the interim, we'll be setting up several interested stakeholder meetings, and I'll be talking to you members that are interested in doing so to see what areas of commonality we might have and further refine the issues that I brought out here earlier on the different areas. So that'll occur over the summer, and people will be given good notice about that, probably start in June. That, folks, is the kind of the game plan. That's where we're going to start with. I see we have about an hour and 15 minutes and a few testifiers. We're going to start out this morning with Mr. Stanek from Quest, I believe. So if you want to take the table and just identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony. Looks like we have maybe 10, 15 minutes of testifier, roughly.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Stanek. I'm the president of Quest Communications here in the state of Minnesota, appearing this morning on behalf of our 4,400 employees in the state to talk with you a little bit about the soon-to-be-introduced proposed legislation to provide state authorization to provide wireline video service in the state of Minnesota. The legislation that will be introduced is modeled on rules that allowed cable companies to provide voice services here in the state of Minnesota. With me is Mr. Andy Schreiner. Andy, you probably should introduce yourself for the record, too.
For the record, my name is Andy Schreiner. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Quest.
So I thought, Mr. Chair, with your permission, what I would do is briefly address the technology that makes this possible for Quest and other companies to provide wireline competition to the cable companies, talk a little bit about what we see as the benefits of this proposed legislation, namely increased competition, which will result in lower prices for Minnesota consumers, and accelerate the deployment of advanced broadband services throughout the state, and then walk briefly through the provisions of the proposed legislation. In terms of the technology, Quest and other companies are looking at deploying what is called IPTV. It seems like these days most things involve the Internet, and thus is the case with IPTV. IPTV basically allows you, through your Internet connection, to not only get high-speed Internet services, but to also get video services into the home. This is technology that is not just theoretical. It's being used by AT&T in various areas around the country, and I know their representatives are here this morning, and they will probably address how this is actually working in the marketplace. But we are looking at this technology as well. What it utilizes is investment in fiber. Fiber optic cable is run into the neighborhood, and Quest would use the existing copper wires that are in place to run much higher bandwidth into the home. 30 to 40 meg is currently being utilized in our labs. That would allow companies like Quest to provide customers not only voice services, which we have traditionally provided, not only high-speed internet at much higher speeds than are provided today, but video services on a wireline basis that would directly compete on a local level with the cable companies. In terms of the benefits of this proposed legislation, we are advocates of Minnesota joining 9 other states that have already enacted statewide video franchising legislation, and have some of those states are already starting to see the benefits of that competition in their local communities. There is a wealth of research on this issue. The Federal Cable Communications Commission has done a number of studies, and it found that since the 1996 Telecommunications Act, services for wireless service have dropped 80%. Interstate telephony rates have decreased 40%. But by contrast, cable prices have increased more than 90%. And the FCC, as well as other observers, attribute that to the absence of wireline competition on the local level. The FCC does annual studies, and in their most recent study, they found that cable prices increased by 5% last year, and as I mentioned, 93% since the enactment of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. They also found that prices are 17% lower where wireline competition is present. And we have, with the permission of the chair and the committee, a chart and a graph that illustrates this dynamic. And maybe I can wait while that's being handed out. Also focus on the General Accounting Office, which has observed in those markets where wireline competition is present, cable rates are significantly lower by about 15% than cable rates in similar markets without wire-based competition. I mentioned that several states, 9 states now, have enacted video legislation that reforms and allows for state-wide franchising. Actually, not all of the 9 states allow for states. Some are done at the municipal level, but ease the entry into the marketplace. And one example I would call to your attention is Texas, which has enacted legislation. In Keller and Plano, Texas, just outside of Dallas, Charter Communications had been charging $68.99 for cable TV service. After the Texas legislature passed franchise reform, Verizon entered the Keller and Plano markets offering 180 channels for $43.95 or 35 channels for just $12.95. Charter responded by slashing its prices and offering a bundle of 240 channels plus high-speed internet for $50, $18.99 less than they were charging previously for cable alone. The chart that you have in front of you shows it summarizes the FCC report on cable industry prices from the end of last year. And what the chart on the left shows is that the average price for cable programming in areas where there is no wireline competition. And then it compares to satellite competition, DirecTV, the Dish Network, And it then compares it to areas where there is facilities-based competition of the type contemplated in this proposed legislation, showing that the average price for that programming is lower. In other words, the FCC has found that while satellite TV provides a competitive option for consumers, it does not effectively drive prices lower. Quest, currently using a different technology, provides video service in Phoenix, Arizona. The chart at the right shows what Cox Communications charges for cable programming in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Quest does not provide services there. And then what Cox charges in Phoenix, Arizona, as well as what Quest charges in Phoenix, Arizona. And two things are notable about that. Number one, Quest offers lower pricing in Phoenix than Cox Communications, our major cable competitor in that market. But what's interesting is that Cox's prices for the same service in Phoenix are lower than the services provided in Baton Rouge. Again, we believe that the proposed legislation will spur entry into the marketplace, give consumers another competitive option, and the research shows that that will result in better prices for consumers. Another advantage of this from our perspective is it will accelerate broadband in the state of Minnesota investment. There will be significant investment involved in this in order to lay the fiber that makes this technology viable. That will result in jobs for our Communications Workers of America union employees and bring benefits to consumers in Minnesota communities. I know that the members of the committee have heard a lot of discussion from municipalities about the need for higher internet access, higher speeds, further investment in their communities. We have worked hard over the last 3 years to expand our DSL high-speed internet footprint across the state, and we will provide higher speeds and more investment as time goes forward. Then to talk about the provisions of this legislation, just a brief backdrop. In 1996, the Congress passed the Telecommunications Act with the goal of encouraging competition, eliminating barriers to entry, and spurring competition in the voice telephony markets. That resulted in states like Minnesota adopting legislation that established new and special rules for competitors who were entering the market. Those competitors, it was thought as a matter of state and federal policy that the policymakers wanted to encourage competition and bring benefit to consumers by promoting easier entry to the market as using, as I say, those different rules and a relaxed regulatory environment. Specifically, cable companies or companies that chose to go into the voice telephony market did not have the same service quality requirements as those imposed on incumbent carriers like US West, now Quest. They did not have the same pricing requirements of incumbent carriers like Quest. And perhaps most importantly for one of the major issues in this proposed legislation, there was not an obligation on the part of those carriers to serve all customers in a particular geographic area. It's known in the telephony world as a provider of last resort obligation, and it was not imposed on new entrants. The theory was the cable companies or other competitors should have a streamlined entry process, and there should be an encouragement to them to come into the market and compete with the beneficial impact on prices. Compare that to the environment facing us in the cable world today. We have basically a process that was established 30 years ago that has created de facto local wireline monopolies and imposes significant barriers to entry. No one could have anticipated 30 years ago that these technologies available today to offer voice, video, and high-speed internet services over the internet would have been possible or could have encouraged this type of competition. In terms of the proposed legislation that this committee and the legislature will be considering, it's modeled on the very same rules cable companies use to enter the voice market to compete with companies like Quest and other phone companies throughout the state of Minnesota. So the legislation takes Chapter 237 relates to telephony, Chapter 238 relates to cable companies, and it imposes a carve-out in Chapter 238, the cable statute, for competitive video providers. Much the same as the competitive local exchange carriers and the cable companies who provide the local service had some special rules to incent them to enter the voice world and provide telephone service, so would this statute create some exceptions and allow companies to enter and compete in the video world. Section 2 of the proposed legislation mirrors the rules that are in place for competitive local exchange carriers entering today and would provide that a video competitive video provider seeking authorization from the state of Minnesota to provide video services would need to go to the PUC, provide certain information, and would get a authorization from the state PUC, much the same as a cable company would go and get an authorization from the state PUC to offer voice services. Another issue that's been important is the requirement and the commitment to provide public access. And in Section 3 of the bill, there was a requirement that whatever the cable company is providing locally in terms of public access channels, public education, government channels, any channels that are required to be provided by the cable company, the competitive video provider would need to provide on its service. So the idea is to make that obligation parallel. Section 4 of the bill provides that under the current situation, cable companies pay a franchise fee to the municipality. This would provide that whatever the cable company is paying to the municipality, the competitive video provider would provide as a local video provider fee. So if the cable company is paying 5%, a company that would come in as a competitive video provider would pay 5%. Section 5 of the bill addresses an issue that quite frankly has been used in disturbing ways, I would say. And we've heard the argument that if competitive video providers come into the market, they'll cherry pick or they'll redline. The most distasteful arguments say that there will be some type of discrimination based on the income of a resident in a particular area. Let me make it clear with the members of the committee. Redlining and discrimination is illegal. It's immoral. It's something that our company has never done and never will do. And what this provision says is it shall not occur. We, as a matter of fact, have gone beyond any type of discrimination that would be based on income to include the law in other areas like insurance and banking to include not just income but racial or ethnic characteristics in a local area. Let me make it clear. Redlining is wrong. It should not occur. It must not occur. And this is a provision that says it will not occur in this state. In terms of customer service, we would comply with the requirements of federal law in terms of service requirements to provide to our customers. Section 7 of the bill indicates that there's a process for the resolution of disputes, an informal process at the local level, and then an ability to bring an action, either the municipality or an aggrieved individual in district court, to require that a company comply with the requirements of state law. So, briefly, those are the provisions in the bill. This bill does not, it's different than the legislation that's been introduced in other states. You will have seen a range, probably, of proposed legislation. There's a model bill that's out there. Each state has its own wrinkles, but what we have attempted to do in Minnesota is to say those rules that allowed the cable companies to come in and provide telephony services have been beneficial for consumers. It's lowered prices and given consumers choices. Why shouldn't we take those same rules and allow voice companies, telephony companies, traditional telephone companies to come into the video world using that new technology? We have not. There is no language in this proposed legislation that would impair the rights of cities to regulate the use of their rights of way. And we've attempted, in terms of most of the core concerns of the cities, to address those through the provisions of this bill. The one area that I think there is outstanding concern about is build-out requirements. And if I could just briefly comment on that, the FCC in a recent order indicated that build-out requirements that would require a company coming into the market to face a monopoly competitor to provide service to everyone in that community, that imposes an investment cost that cannot be matched. You're starting with zero customers, competing against a monopoly, and it's just not an economically viable option. As a matter of fact, the commentators, the United States Department of Justice, and others have observed that build-out requirements impose a barrier to entry such that it makes entry non-feasible. We cannot afford to enter everywhere all at the same time. Our wire centers are not set up along municipal boundaries in the city of Woodbury, for example. Three wire centers serve the city of Woodbury. Wire centers in the telephony world are not set up along municipal boundaries. So, again, I've probably exhausted my time, Mr. Chair. Briefly, that's a summary of our view on this legislation. We would ask that the legislature give us the same ability to enter the video world that the cable companies had when they came in and competed in the telephony world. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Very good. Well said. If members wouldn't mind holding, unless they have a real urgent question that try to get through the testifiers, but if you do have a brief question you want to ask, we can certainly proceed. Representative Junkie.
Well, just a couple of questions that I'm thinking about for Quest. If this would pass, obviously you must have plans to begin implementing. When would you see you getting into that market?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, that's a difficult question to answer. I think the answer in broad terms would be sometime within the next 2 years. Okay. The technology is now being utilized, as I indicated, by AT&T and other companies. From our perspective, we want to make sure the technology is ready for prime time before we roll this out to our consumers. We're going to make sure it works and is reliable and ready to go. We don't have specific deployment plans because as of today, we don't have a franchise agreement from any local unit of government, and there is no state legislation that would authorize us, like the cable companies, to get state authorization. What we are trying to do is to get this discussion teed up at the legislature to allow us to eliminate legal and regulatory barriers to entry such that when the technology is ready to go, there can be rapid entry into the market. I can't be more specific than that, but I can tell you that we are working very hard to bring this to market, but we need to have a legal and regulatory environment that allows us to provide the service.
And again, just to confirm, so you're prepared then, if this would pass, to make significant investment of capital and provide services at competitive prices across the state, not just in the metro?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, that's correct.
Very good. Mr. Schreiner, did you have anything to add right off? I guess we have a question from Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I do have a question for you. I would just like to know if this should pass, how would Quest guarantee that the performance would actually be better for rural Minnesota? I mean, like, how would this change what appears to be the company's current business practice of not providing service to those at the end of the line? I want to know what would be different this time. You talked about not cherry picking and redlining, and the concern that companies have for needing to build out, and you know, if they're not the major provider. So how do you explain when you are the major provider currently in an area that you've chosen not to extend broadband? Why would this be different in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative. First of all, as to the redlining arguments, as I indicated, Section 5 of the bill explicitly prohibits redlining. It indicates that there would be a cause of action against the holder of a statewide authorization to provide video service in the event anyone could establish that there had been some type of discrimination based on income, race, or ethnicity characteristics in a particular community. In terms of the deployment statewide, absolutely we would commit to deploying this technology statewide. And the experience, there are some wire centers in Minnesota, some central offices that do not have high-speed internet today. There are a number that do. There are also a number of areas in the Twin Cities metropolitan area that do not have high-speed internet service. But in terms of the cherry-picking redlining argument, the argument really doesn't hold up. If you look at areas, in the state of Minnesota and in the Twin Cities in particular, where high-speed internet has been deployed, those areas that have a density of population tend to be the areas where we first deploy. And the reasons for that are fairly obvious. You want to try to get a return on your investment so you can make some money so you can deploy in other areas. Areas that are more rural, whether they be in greater Minnesota or that lack a density of population in the Twin Cities area, tend to be slower to deploy. But we will deploy throughout the state, and we will follow the requirements of this proposed legislation.
Members, any other questions for our testifiers before us? All right, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next we have Ms. Johnson, Joanne Johnson. If you identify yourself for the record, please, and who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joanne Johnson. I'm the Central Region Government Affairs Manager for Frontier Communications, which is a citizens communications company. We have territory all over Minnesota. We are considered a rural provider, although we do have some exchanges in the southern suburbs. And we are the second largest phone provider in the state after Qwest. In all of our exchanges, going even from the northwest corner down to the Iowa border, we provide high-speed internet service to our customers. And we are here today, Frontier appears, to speak in support of the concept of video competition being good for Minnesota. And we have a variety of reasons for feeling that way. One of the most important to us, of course, is a very strong business driver. And that driver is the change in the industry regarding how we operate and what we do. It wasn't very long ago, actually, that when someone new moved to town, the very first phone call they made before they got there was to the phone company saying, I need a phone. I'll be there on the 5th, and I want my phone on the 5th. And we did our best to comply. At this point in time, almost invariably, the first phone call is made on their cell phone to the cable company instead. And that makes sense because they have voice service from an alternative source. It also makes sense that the cable company would take advantage of this and say, while I have you on the phone, did you understand that we can also provide you with high-speed internet and, oh, by the way, voice service? And we never see the customer. We never get a shot at them at all. And that's the way the market is today. And the cable companies are right to do this. They have enjoyed ease of entry into the voice business for 11 years. They would be silly not to capitalize on it. The only way to prosper in this industry now is to offer an ever-expanding group of services to the consumer and to offer them well and at an affordable, a competitive price. In order to do that, we have to be very flexible and we have to be very fast. And the only way we can do that is to have an environment that will allow us to fulfill the promise of a robust marketplace by giving us some measure of ease of entry. We were vehemently opposed in 1996 to the cable company or any other competitive carrier being able to come in and serve anyone they wanted, wherever, whoever that they cared to at any point in time, and there was nothing we could do about it. Fact of the matter is, nobody died, nobody went out of business, the consumer was the one who benefited, the prices went down, and the same will be true when we make that sea change in the video business as well as the voice. I also know that the cities have significant concerns, one of the biggest ones being potential loss of revenue. Right now, Frontier and Citizens provides video service to their customers with a partnership with Dish Network, and that's a satellite provider, as you all know. And what has happened now is that the biggest competitor to cable companies has been satellite providers. Satellite providers pay no franchise fee, because franchise fee is meant to reimburse cities for the use of the right-of-way, and satellite providers do not use the right-of-way. So we really do think that wireline competitors coming into town, bundling all of those services that cable companies bundle from their side, now being offered by another wireline competitor like the local phone company, is actually going to take that market share from satellite, which is not a particularly pleasant scenario for us and will drive us to doing IPTV much faster than we would have otherwise. But those revenues may actually increase at the franchise level because of that kind of dynamic in the marketplace. I cover 6 states for Frontier. It's a very active year for video. We have 3 bills we're working right now in Iowa and in Wisconsin and in Illinois. Iowa intends to pass their bill out by the end of their session in April. Wisconsin is looking for floor passage at the end of May. Illinois is holding their hearings in the House right now, preparatory to sending the bill to the Senate. All of these things look very favorable for passage this year. Last year, we had bills that passed in Michigan and Indiana. that did rate the regulation on voice services along with video competition rules. Minnesota is my last state left, and I look forward to the opportunity to work with the committee, with Quest, with the cable companies, with all of the stakeholders, including the cities, in the interim to create the most favorable language we can for the state of Minnesota's consumers. I really think that Quest may have voluntarily given away too much. There's some changes we'd like to see in the language, and all that can be accomplished as long as we agree to work together. I also spoke with my colleagues at Embark Telephone, the old Sprint. It was Sprint until a year ago. And Embark also agrees at the same position that Frontier is, with the concept that video competition is good for Minnesota and that the time is right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Be happy to stand for questions or hold them until later.
Very good. Representative Hoppe?
Do you want me to wait till the end? I think they're quick, but...
No, go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Johnson, when you talked about the other states, just very simply, how has it worked in other states that already have legislation similar to this?
Most of the application processes are handled either by a Secretary of State's office, sometimes there's the Department of Commerce involved, but most of them are handled by the commissions, the same commissions that handle the voice regulations. And the entry process is generally shortened down to something very similar to what CLEX have to do to get into the voice business. It's generally a 3 to 5 page application outlining who you are, where you intend to serve. Most of them are put into language that allows companies to go exchange by exchange. You get a statewide franchise, but you can roll that out on your own timeline. Most of them have some consideration for existing franchises to roll over into state franchise at the end of their term. Some of them have options that when a competitor comes into a community, the incumbent then can choose to roll to a state franchise. Most of them always contain the franchise fee for the competitor that matches the incumbent. And they all have considerations on peg channel provision and some sort of prohibition against redlining. And those are the common denominators.
Representative Hoppe?
Real quickly, follow-up. How does it work for the consumer?
The consumer, then, will have a choice of bundles. Bundles are very popular now with the consumer and with the companies because bundles are a good way for us to market, and it's a cost saver for the consumer, so it's a win-win as far as we're concerned. What this will mean is that they have a choice of bundles. So in addition to being able to, from the cable company, get a bundle for a two-year term, you can get that same bundle, perhaps, hopefully, at a lower price from the phone company, which will cause another price war to happen in the geographic region, and the consumer should benefit from both the choice and the price.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson, may I ask a question? Have you ever tried to gain entry into a local area through the current franchise system?
Mr. Chair, Representative, basically, Frontier has made the business decision at this point in time to stick with our partnership with Dish and Author Satellite while we test IPTV. Just as Quest has said before, this is new technology, and we want them to go out and prove it. AT&T is using it in a big way. We are actually working with the AT&T labs in Texas, following their lead, and as soon as we know it's reliable and scalable, we will be very fast to move into that market. But for the time being, we have concentrated on satellite, and we have no IPTV installations yet. There will be test markets. There should be test markets in each of our three regions probably by the end or middle of next year.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown? and identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
Good morning, Chairman Johnson and members of the committee. My name is Juanita Brown, and I am the Regional Vice President for Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for AT&T. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today regarding video franchise reform, and I'm encouraged to know that you're interested in gathering information about how best to streamline and facilitate this process. Streamlining the current video franchise system will usher in new and a brighter day for consumers here in Minnesota. By implementing a pro-consumer policy, you can create an environment where competitors can easily enter the market and thereby allow consumers to benefit and reap the benefits of lower prices and choices. As Quest indicated, the FCC just recently determined that from 1995 through 2005, cable rates have increased by approximately 93% nationally. That's right, 93% increase over the last 10 years. The only answer to these really skyrocketing rates, we believe, is to encourage competition in the market and to you need to update your video franchise laws in the states, which, as Quest indicated, 9 states have already done, and then a couple other states have had either an AG opinion that allows video reform to occur, and one state has a PUC, which is Connecticut. They have the authority in Connecticut through their, Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, a decision there. You know, what happens when states enact video reform? What we've seen as we look across the country is that in Herndon, Virginia, cable rates dropped 42% after wireline video competition entered the market. Following the passage of the law in Texas, as John indicated, the cable provider there dropped their rates 25% when Verizon entered the market. And then in Temple Terrace, Florida, customers benefited from a 37% decrease in their cable rates. We believe that Minnesotans deserve the opportunity to reap similar benefits. You know, now, when we talk about video reform, I think it's important to place it in perspective. You know, many people try to draw a parallel between video reform and telephone service. However, in my mind, video service has a lot more in common with your local movie theater than it really does telephone service. If you think about it for a moment, is video service really an essential lifeline service? No, I don't believe so. I think video service is an essential is a discretionary entertainment service. It's not a utility service, and as such, we should not attempt to saddle video service with traditional regulatory oversight. Regulatory oversight is needed when you have a non-competitive market, but it's not appropriate in a competitive marketplace. So what should you as legislators look at when you consider video franchise reform? Well, first, as many have mentioned, I think you need to look at the application and approval process for how a video provider can enter the market. Under the current law, as you know, what would happen today if I wanted to enter the market is I would have to go city by city and enter negotiations with each of those cities. This is a lengthy and costly process. It also has no time frames that I can know for certain how long is it going to take before I can get in that market. You know, at the FCC, evidence was placed before them that it can take 2 weeks, it can take 2 months, it can take 2 years to negotiate a franchise. And what happens in the meantime? The customers lose the benefits that competition can bring them. You know, in our belief is that successful video franchise reform, what you need to do is mandate a uniform, statewide application process that would be predictable and have a time frame for the approval process. You know, this is very similar to what other competitive providers and businesses are subjected to today in Minnesota. I kind of liken this to, if I was the owner of a chain of movie theaters, okay, and I'm operating in Wisconsin today, and I decide I want to come to Minnesota, what would I have to do if I wanted to open up a new movie theater and provide entertainment services here? I would go to the Secretary of State, and I would fill out paperwork that would give me the right to do business in the state. And then what would I do? I would begin my business and begin providing entertainment services to consumers. That's what we need to set up for the video franchise, the new video franchise, the new video service providers here in Minnesota. I think the second thing that we have to do is that good video policy should recognize the legitimate needs of the cities. What are those? I think we need to ensure that there is a fair and rational franchise fee that is set up that's based on the gross revenues derived from video franchise services. Next, we need to make sure that the cities maintain oversight of the right-of-ways, because the video providers and cable providers will continue to use those. We also believe that video providers should ensure public access to public access, the PEG channels, as well as public safety information. Third, I think we need to look at video franchise reform should establish parameters regarding unreasonable requests by the local franchising authorities, and it should really specifically address build-out requirements. You know, the market conditions, as Dawn indicated earlier, are very different today from when the incumbent cable providers were entering the market and they were forced to build out. Because the incumbent cable providers were basically given a community-wide monopoly. They were given the opportunity to be the only provider in the city. In exchange for that, they committed to build out throughout the city. Now, when you look at a new video market entrant, what can they expect when they enter the market? You know, they can only expect to maybe gather a fraction of the market. And so we can't require a new entrant to provide service to the whole community when they can only expect a small percentage of that market to be gained by them. And that's why if you have build-out requirements that are onerous, then new entrants won't come to the market. They'll look elsewhere. And that's not what we want here. We want to incent companies to come. We want to give customers choice and the ability to enjoy those lower prices that we talked about that are happening in Texas today, in Florida today, in Virginia today. You know, I also agree with Quest that, you know, while we do not believe build-out requirements are appropriate, we do believe that it is appropriate to mandate that discrimination should be prohibited among any potential residential customers. We believe that no video provider should be allowed to deny access to any group of potential customers because of income, racial, or ethnic characteristics. We do believe it's time to reform access, video franchise access laws here in Minnesota. We think there's many emerging technologies which we, in where we are the local provider like Quest, have introduced throughout the market in our territories. And we look forward to working with you during the interim to build the proper franchise laws here that hopefully someday as technology grows will allow us to come and provide services in Minnesota. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Jenke.
Well, same question I've been asking, let's say, I guess I asked Quest. Frontier kind of indicated they would come. So you have plans to enter the cable TV market, not only in the Twin Cities, but across, and make investments in all cities or a number of cities across the state if this would pass?
I think as Quest, John indicated, IPTV and the way our video product works is today, the technology that's out there today. We do not have the facilities here in Minnesota. Now, it's not to say, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't ever dream that I could sit at my computer and watch a TV show that I missed because I was here in Minnesota last night. But I can do that today. technology is changing so rapidly that what we want to do is work with you to have rules in place so that when the technology is available, that we are able to come into the state. But no, I cannot tell you today, we do not have the technology available for Minnesota. We do have it, and we have deployed it, where we are the local exchange provider, and we are today provisioning IPTV in various markets across the country.
So, Mr. Chair, at this point,
Mr. Bianchi,
and in the next year or two, if this passes next year, you do not have plans to have cable TV in Minnesota, or you are planning to have? I didn't quite get
that. I'm sorry.
Cable TV. Are you going to come to Minnesota with cable TV, AT&T?
Ms. Brown?
I have no specific plans for the next 2 years. We just think it's good public policy to adopt video franchise reform.
Very good. Thank you. And next week we do hope to have some testimony too regarding the FCC ruling that kind of casts a shadow over some of the state franchising proposals, get a little bit more context again over this whole topic. Coming next is Jeff Luters. Welcome. Could identify yourself for the record and move forward with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Leaders, and I am the manager of video services for the city of Lakeville, and I'm in my third term as president of the board of MACTA, the Minnesota Association of Community Telecommunications Administrators. And we are the Minnesota chapter of the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors. And I'm happy to be here today. As Paul Harvey would say, now for the rest of the story. MACT is a nonprofit association representing 107 cities and 9 townships in Minnesota. MACT was formed in 1982 as a trade association supporting its member cities by providing educational networking and legislative regulatory assistance related to cable television and telecommunications. As you can see by our membership list that's attached to your document today, we have members all across the state, and we have all sizes of communities. MACT members include cities, townships, cable commissions, and community cable TV facilities. Virtually all of our members are also members of the League of Minnesota Cities. And our members specialize in local cable franchising, rights-of-way management, public education, and government PEG television and community networks. The LMC has well over 800 member cities, and we believe approximately 600 of these cities have granted cable franchises in the state of Minnesota. We've had less than 48 hours to review this concept document, and we understand an actual bill from the revisor's office may be available next week. However, we are prepared to comment on the general concepts. We also find many specific deficiencies in this document as it stands, but we will be better prepared to cover the numerous legal and technical problems next week if the chair is planning to continue this discussion beyond today's hearing. We oppose preemption of local franchise authority over video providers by the state government. This proposal is the incumbent local phone company attempting to pass a bill to take away local franchise authority and create a statewide structure that gives them an advantage and is harmful to many of the strong and important community benefits that have been developed here in Minnesota under the current statute. Mr. Chair and members, you are aware that phone companies across the country are making this attack in the U.S. Congress, at various state legislatures, in the courts, and at the FCC. So unfortunately, we cities know the problems with this concept and are well-versed in the damages that can occur. Attached is a list of basic principles provided by MACTA and our related organizations, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Alliance for Community Media. We find that Quest Bill violates most of these principles. Today we'd like to mention 8 of the many reasons we oppose Quest's concept. First of all, there's no need for this legislation. Or why are we here? Quest will not invest. Quest has publicly announced that they do not intend to invest soon in upgrading their infrastructure to provide video. In Minnesota, they currently use a partnership with a satellite dish provider to include video in their bundled service package. And as one of my colleagues pointed out, the package in the St. Paul area is $98. The package, similar package of Triple Play offered by Comcast, $99. So no huge cost savings as alliterated to by Mr. Stanek. and the Chicago Tribune story entitled, I quote, Profitable Quest to Hold Off on Video, unquote, by reporter John Vann, published February 9, 2007. Quest CEO Richard Notebaert is reported to have said even if he had the money to upgrade Quest phone networks to carry video programming, he'd probably wait. The Tribune attributes this quote to Quest CEO, and I quote, we'll sit back and watch AT&T scale up its video, and we'll learn from their experience. Quest may upgrade its network to carry video in a more efficient fashion in a few years because of what AT&T and Verizon are doing now, unquote, Notebaert said, quote, or it may not, unquote. Quest has not applied for a franchise from any local government in Minnesota that we know of. We are ready and waiting to work with them. We have encouraged our membership and the League of Minnesota Cities membership to streamline our franchise application process to make it possible for our residents to have the benefits of multiple wireline video providers as soon as possible. Cities have no incentive to be an obstacle to competition. In fact, we should point out a basic fact that many people do not understand. Current cable franchises in Minnesota are not exclusive and never have been exclusive. Current state law precludes cities from granting exclusive franchises and provides guidance for the procedure of granting competitive franchises. Number two, competitive franchises are being successfully granted in Minnesota. In response to an FCC request for comments last year, MACTA collected data from our members showing that approximately 46 cities currently have at least two wireline video providers. And this does not include satellite dish services. Map and supporting data are attached to your document. Many of these competitors are the independent phone companies in these towns, or in a couple of examples, municipal utilities or phone systems who upgraded to provide video. These 40-some companies honored the current local franchise process, and we think Quest should too. It is also worth noting that there have already been examples of competitive video providers who have come into a community, used the rights of way to construct or upgrade to compete with the cable company, and then gone out of business, sold out, or left town. In February 2006, when we constructed this map, we had 51 cities with competitive franchises, but by November's update, the second competitor in six of those had sold its video operation to the incumbent cable company. This emphasizes the need for cities to be in control of our rights of way. Cities and our residents are left holding the bag when a company leaves town, possibly abandoning equipment in our rights of way, and consumers are back to just one provider. Number three, Quest has not applied for franchises in Minnesota. If Quest truly desires to provide video services over its wireline infrastructure, we welcome them with open arms and to apply for franchises from our member cities. One of our Metro members stated that his communities could have Quest franchise before the end of this legislative session. In fact, several cities and cable commissions here in the Metro have processed competitive franchise applications for two new companies coming into the state wanting to overbuild the incumbent cable and phone companies with new fiber infrastructure during the year of 2000. Many of these cities went through the process to near completion and had issued franchises to either Everest Communications or Wide Open West. But as you remember, that's when the dot-com market collapsed and they subsequently lost their venture capital financing and slowed or stopped their expansion plans. Number four, franchise authority must remain at the local level. What it comes down to is the management and protection of public-owned rights of way. To be sure, Quest is not ready to flip a switch to begin sending cable TV video signals out to its customers' homes on its current network. Substantial disruption to the streets and rights of way will be necessary for Quest to add fiber optic lines and major electronics hardware for the provision of video. We have photos that are attached to your document of examples in other parts of the country showing AT&T and Verizon utility boxes the size of large upright refrigerator freezer units appearing in alleys and rights of way. We have learned from engineers in these communities about the major coordination necessary as the construction process causes service interruptions, property damage, and inevitable cut lines to existing electrical, telephone, and cable companies already using the rights of way. One consulting engineer who works for local governments across the country has been observing the local phone company's upgrade construction project in her own neighborhood in suburban Washington, D.C. She reports that the local cable company now routinely sends its repair trucks out to follow the competitor's construction crew around town to repair the cut lines as they happen. The safety and cost issues for private and public landowners, travelers on the streets, and residents are obvious. There is no way these local rights-of-way management issues can or should be addressed by a state agency or department. Number five, broadband deployment must include all communities and all neighborhoods within a community. Cities have a great stake in assuring that communication services are available to residents and businesses across our boundaries. Economic development, education and workforce development, public safety, health and welfare services depend on it. As you can see on the fifth item on our checklist of our principles, cities oppose discriminating redlining. Cities oppose economic, racial, and other discriminatory redlining and seek to assist in closing the digital divide by allowing more choices for consumers in every neighborhood. Cities are in the best position to determine at the local level how and where video providers serve their community. Obviously, Qwest does not want local governments to have any say in its build-out plans. In 2000, my employer, the City of Lakeville, granted a franchise to Wide Open West, giving them 5 years to build out their plant to serve all homes, meeting the minimum density requirement that was included in the cable TV franchise. Our incumbent phone company is to apply for a video franchise from us. We believe that, if our incumbent phone company is to apply for a video franchise from us, we believe that since they already serve all of our homes with telephone service, it is reasonable to expect that eventually they will upgrade their network throughout our community to offer video services not just to their hand-picked high-profit areas, but to all customers who currently receive their telephone services. It is only a matter of giving them a reasonable time frame to upgrade their network, and we trust that could be reached. Six, we are here to debunk the myth that Minnesota must pass a statewide franchise bill to keep up with the rest of the nation. In fact, about 9 states have revised their cable franchising process to take authority away from cities and move it up to the state level. A few recently, and those that are finding very uncertain results in the first 6 to 18 months since doing so. In those states that have passed state franchising bills pushed forward by the telephone industry, false expectations created by the telephone industry have not been met. It sounds good when they say, quote, competition will explode and cable prices will go down, unquote. Who wouldn't want that? But in reality, even in Texas, which has had the longest time under the new structure, approximately 18 months, we are told that the increase in competition has not happened. The rates have not plunged, and in fact some have continued to increase, and many unintended and damaging consequences have resulted. Many other states are rejecting telephone company-sponsored statewide franchising schemes, including at least 3 of our fellow Qwest states that we know of, Colorado, Utah, and Washington. So please don't be misled that this is a nationwide trend and Minnesota must keep up with the rest. Number 7, the recent FCC order is not a reason to change state law. We predicted that Qwest would claim that they need revision of state franchising because of the recent, very controversial FCC order voted December 20, 2006 and just released March 5, 2007. We believe that the exact opposite is the case. First of all, if the FCC order were to be implemented as currently written, it lays out reasonable and unreasonable build-out provisions. If Qwest's true concern is that local governments will be unreasonable in discussing build-out language of their competitive video franchises, the FCC has clearly directed that unreasonableness will not be tolerated. However, we have seen no evidence presented that local governments have been unreasonable, and we assert that we have no incentive to be unreasonable. Why would cities want to impede our residents' ability to have more choices for their video services? Again, our members welcome Qwest to come and apply for franchises, and we'd like to get them into the video business as quickly as possible. Secondly, the FCC order will be appealed, and we expect lengthy litigation or other appeal proceedings. Minnesota should not further complicate the questions of preemption between state and federal levels by drastically revising our current franchising structure right now, especially when no evidence has been produced to show that Qwest cannot honor the current franchise process. Apply for and receive video franchises from cities and get into the business whenever it is ready to do so. Finally, Minnesota has a uniquely strong tradition of local community television, community networking that must be preserved and protected. It is our understanding that other speakers are scheduled to present information on this topic, especially Mike Wassenaar, Executive Director of the St. Paul Neighborhood Network and the Chair of the National Alliance for Community Media and its Midwest chapter, so we will not take much time on this subject. This is, however, a priority issue for MACTEC. Again, see our principles as attached. We have many examples where vital community needs are met through franchise-enabled services such as public educational and government programs and expansive fiber optic institutional networks. For chair and members, many of you are familiar with the wide range of local PEG programming that brings residents their city council meetings, local news, faith services, election information, high school music and sports programs, educational shows, and important multicultural and immigration programming. Some of you may not be as familiar with the many INET projects we have in the state. For example, the Northern Dakota County Cable Communications Commission, NDC4, franchise allowed a very creative collaboration between city, county, state, and school district entities to share the cost for a state-of-the-art fiber ring that is relied upon for police, fire, school district, library, and other connections between about 42 buildings, connecting each entity's own buildings as well as to their county and city or state headquarters and to the Internet. These entities entered into this cooperative agreement and paid up front for the construction costs of the fiber ring with the understanding that the cable franchise would stand for 15 years from 2000 to 2015. Obviously, these public entities will suffer serious financial loss if the incumbent operator is relieved sometime midterm as a reaction to another company getting special treatment. Quest's concept threatens to destroy funding for PEG and INET items and could lead to the incumbent cable operators asking for relief from similar provisions in their existing franchises. Not only does this not support PEG, but also it creates a disincentive for communities to encourage and support local communications and diverse media sources. Please do not unravel a successful and strong structure that has served this state well since the late 1970s without understanding all the ramifications. Good laws do stand the test of time. Competition does not ensure lower rates. Cable providers lived within current law to offer telephony. We believe that the telephone companies should live within the current law to provide cable TV. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for your time and attention this morning. We would be happy to answer any questions. And again, if this hearing is to be continued next week, we look forward to providing more detailed legal and technical analysis of the many troublesome aspects of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Leader, for your testimony. Questions from members? Seeing none, we'll move on to our next testifier. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wassener. If you'd identify yourself for the record and move ahead with your testimony. Is Mr. Reardon, are you still here? Oh, there you are, okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Wassenaar.
How much time do you think you're going to take, Mr. Wassenaar?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay.
Will that work at your pleasure?
Yep, five is perfect, thanks.
My name is Mike Wassenaar. I'm Executive Director of the St. Paul Neighborhood Network. This is the second time I've spoken to the committee this session, and I want to thank you for the opportunity. I represent not just my organization, which is Community Access Television Facility in St. Paul, but I also represent public access centers across the country as the chair of the Alliance for Community Media, which is a national organization that supports PEG centers in the United States. I really want to thank the committee for giving different interests in the state an opportunity to review the language that's being discussed as this concept bill is being discussed in Minnesota. My remarks reflect some of the grave concerns that we have as we look at the concepts here, as well as the concerns of member organizations that I've talked to actually in the last 24 hours after taking a look at the language. So this is sort of the age of rapid response. We've actually had a chance to vet some of this language with our members across the state and actually also with other centers across the country. Generally, I want to say that I understand the bill is in its conceptual stages, but I want to briefly outline a couple of aspects that would hurt Minnesota communities and provide barriers for communities that wish to provide PEG services in the future. I do want to say I appreciate Mr. Stanek's representation of the committee that there should be an offer to provide parallel obligations as wireline providers enter into the market. I think that is a fair standard that actually is embraced under current Minnesota law. And that should actually be an ethic that the committee moves forward on as they look at providing parallel obligations for this social obligation under PEG channels within the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, like other bills that are being promoted by the television industry, the telephone industry across the United States, the bill shifts significant costs and places burdens on local municipalities that promote PEG programming to local residents. In Section 3 of the draft, the responsibility and the implied cost of providing video signals to the competitive network is placed on local governments. It's not being borne by the competitive network, as is currently the case under Minnesota law. The cost would presumably include extra video modulators and encoding equipment to get the PEG signal to a competitive network. And it would include the connectivity at appropriate data speeds at the location of a corporation's choosing. For a smaller community, we presume that the cost will actually make providing necessary programming to the public prohibitive, and then would be an impossibility. So you actually may see that to be a barrier to entry for PEG programming to get onto new networks. Further, Section 4 outlines a process where a competitive video network would charge back costs and mandatory payments against the 5% franchise fee provided to a municipality. This would ensure that all costs for the connectivity and supporting and provision of PEG services would actually reduce franchise money available to local communities, and thus provide a further disincentive. As I've joked with several other people, PEG is the baby that everyone wishes to kiss, but no one necessarily wishes to feed it or change its diapers. So I think the devil's in the details of some of this language. I do appreciate, though, the idea behind the idea of providing parallel obligations. For the sake of time, I'll condense some of my remarks here. I've attached a list of municipalities in the metro area to give you a sense of the PEG support fees that are provided to approximately 9 systems in some 60 municipalities just in the metro area. That gives you a sense of the support that goes on top of the franchise fee. Okay. Under Minnesota law that currently exists, and under a competitive franchise under Minnesota law currently, a parallel obligation would be asked for a provider. And it could be done on a per-subscriber basis as being described by Quest in its request. Another troubling aspect of the bill is the voluntary and subjective nature of key technical aspects of the language that makes it necessary to provide adequate PEG services to the public. In Section 3, there's a reference to a sufficient amount of capacity on video networks or PEG channels. Who exactly determines what is sufficient is never defined. Most providers and municipalities have actually negotiated for appropriate bandwidth under the current process. And we think that that's necessary in any type of competitive video network. Without that, without some definition of sufficient capacity for professional quality digital video channels, we believe that PEG will be squeezed into the smallest amount of bandwidth possible and would thus become unwatchable on most systems. PEG channels should be given the same amount of channel capacity as commercial channels upon which the public relies as well. Minnesota law currently ensures that through Chapter 238 and local franchising, and that's actually a standard that should be embraced by the state as we move forward. Further, placement of PEG channels on a competitive network should be in a convenient and equivalent location to citizens. Current Minnesota law allows that. It guarantees that in the local franchise process is something that could be negotiated. This proposed language has nothing on that. Therefore, a government channel could be on Channel 18 on one network and then on Channel 500 on a competitive video network. And we think that that will be a barrier to information available to the public. Another example of this type of suggestive language that is troublesome to us is the question of how you interconnect video systems between industrial competitors. It's described in Section 3, Subdivision 3. Who exactly determines what is reasonable and unreasonable when, say, Quest and Comcast get together in a room? That actually is unclear in the bill. It would assume that competitors are locked in competition and they're asked to, by this language, to interconnect their video systems. Who acts as a neutral arbitrator in such determinations? It's undefined and unclear in the language. How could we ever ensure good faith amongst competitors? And actually, if you wish to legislate that, how exactly do you go through this type of process? It's a muddy and unclear process that actually I think is unclear in many other state legislative bills that have been put forward across the United States. I don't see any enforcement mechanism for interconnections in the proposals that have been defined. There are a couple other technical aspects of the bill that I want to refer to in my testimony, which has been distributed to the committee in PDF form. And for the sake of time, I won't go into them too much detail. I guess one of the most troubling aspects of the bill for us as we think about building services, building citizen engagement across the state of Minnesota, is that it would effectively lock PEG services in time in 2007 while granting perpetual rights to provide competitive video services in a municipality. Imagine what the needs of citizens will be in the next 20 years as they engage with their government, as they vote, as they get services through religious services, as they get public community education information, distance learning. Can you actually imagine what the needs of Minnesota citizens are going to be in 20 years? None of us in this room can. But the way in which the language is currently constructed in the concept is to limit the capacity of PEG systems as in where current competitors have channel capacity and support. Most all video franchises have the ability, as need increases, for the local municipality to actually engage with the cable provider to provide more capacity and more channels for public need and necessity. This doesn't have any such provision for that type of necessity, for change that happens in local communities. And I think it would be a shame to actually lock us in, lock public obligation in, lock public education in 2007 and be frozen in time when we're actually then giving a perpetual right to provide video service in a local municipality. That said, for the sake of time, there are other technical issues that are in my remarks that I've given to the committee, and I look forward to working with you to be able to provide the type of public support and education that is necessary for that our citizens demand actually across the state. Our member organizations are not against video competition. We welcome it because we actually see this as a way of furthering the public educational need and necessity of our citizens. So we look forward to looking at those standards that are actually embraced currently in Minnesota law and making sure that they're continued. With that, I want to conclude my remarks and welcome any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wassner. Any questions for our testifier? If not, we have one more to go. And come on down, Mr. Reardon. Thank you very much. Does 10 minutes serve you well, Mr. Reardon? Can you?
It better.
Okay, because we will be adjourning.
I think there's a floor that drops off otherwise, right?
That's right. Identify yourself for record, please, and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I am Mike Reardon. I'm the Cable Communications Officer for the City of St. Paul. For the past 20 years, I've been involved in cable franchising with the cities of St. Paul, Burnsville, and Eagan, Minnesota, and I'm also the past president of the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors. So I kind of know what it's like to be on this side of the table when it comes to dealing with cable franchising. On behalf of the City of St. Paul, I'm here today to explain why the City of St. Paul believes the current system works for the provision of video services in Minnesota and in St. Paul. First and foremost, the City of St. Paul applauds the Committee Chair Johnson and Telecommunications Regulation and Infrastructure Division Committee for exploring ways to bring additional competition to our city's residences and businesses. We look forward to the day that our residents and businesses are able to select from a litany of communications and telecommunications providers, just as they're able today to choose from a litany of retail stores and services. Again, I stress, we want competition. Unfortunately, local governments have been broadly painted as a barrier to competition. Yet despite what some video and telecom providers argue, the City of St. Paul and its sister local government entities are not barriers to competition. We're tired of hearing that. Indeed, the City of St. Paul welcomes the opportunity to work closely with video operators in providing competition. Our door has always been open. As already has been discussed by Jeff Leaders, we also, the City of St. Paul, dealt with Everest Communications in Wide Open West in 2000. We were ready to deal with them until the dot-com bust. The state law back then served them well. We believe it will still work today. Unfortunately, the bill before us today does not support competition for all. I stress the word all. Our current franchise, per state law, requires that any provider of cable and video services must provide such services to all of our residents, with the exception of areas for density build-out requirements, and we do not have to worry about those in St. Paul. However, it skirts the issue, the current law, the proposed law, skirts the issue by saying that a competitive service provider may not deny access to any group because of income, race, or ethnic characteristics in the area they reside. With all due respect to the authors of this bill, this does not address the real issue here, service to everyone. Period. This bill simply says competitors will not discriminate. I would certainly hope they wouldn't discriminate. And the best way to ensure this is by providing service to all areas of town within a prescribed period of time, which our current state law does. And while we're here today to discuss video competition, one of the nice side benefits of our cable franchising requirements is that the infrastructure is available to all residents because of the state law. And that same fiber pipe that Comcast put in St. Paul to bring video to us also, guess what, provides high-speed internet access and telephone service. It wasn't required by them because we can't require them to do that. But it made business sense for them to provide all three since they were providing video. And guess what, they provided video because we required them to provide it to all people. Now, guess what? Our residents now have availability to all three services. Funny how that works. If the state passes a law that reduces our ability to ensure that all of our residents have equal access to this type of infrastructure, then the areas of disinvestment in our city will continue to be less livable or less able to existing businesses and attract new ones. Without us being able to ensure build-out, situations like the following example might occur. In St. Paul, Qwest has offered DSL services for a number of years. Unfortunately, not all areas of St. Paul can get this service. In the city of St. Paul's May 2006 Broadband Impact Technology Study, produced by Springstead, Inc., the BIT study indicated that only approximately two-thirds of St. Paul residents received DSL service. Now, to be fair to Qwest, and they have argued this, and we agree to disagree, they state that their number provide approximately 90% of DSL service in St. Paul. However, the city's consultant sticks by their number, and we're not going to get into that argument of who's right, who's wrong, because of my next point. We receive a number of anecdotal comments from residents of St. Paul, especially on the east side. As a Mr. Runyon from St. Paul's east side to me just the other day, he called me on Tuesday. He doesn't care whether the number is 65% or it's 90%. He still cannot get DSL service, period. So if the city of St. Paul cannot ensure service to all areas, and we can't require DSL service to all areas, it makes me wonder how our city's diverse and our less wealthy areas of town will be ensured that they get these new competitive video services. In addition to ensuring all St. Paul residents are able to receive video services and hopefully other services tied to the supporting infrastructure, and the key word here is infrastructure, we are also very concerned how this bill addresses the funding of PEG access government, PEG programming. As already been discussed by Mike Wassner, I won't spend much time talking about this. Just want to highlight that we provide over 200 hours of city and county government meetings in our city each year. We also produce over another 100 hours of local programming for issues on government. In fact, our award-winning ABCs of Government has the ability to both entertain and educate both elementary students and adults on how the city of St. Paul's government operations and policies functions. And that's not an easy thing to do. We are also looking at ways to provide the same information to our numerous diverse ethnic populations in St. Paul in numerous languages. And by the way, I will take a comment from AT&T where they said that video service is not essential. I could argue that phone and internet services is probably not essential 95% of the time. If you think about what you use them really for, 95-99% of the time, they're not essential. But it's nice to have the 911 service. It's nice to have the video service when there's a tornado and an emergency alert goes out, or we need to deal with pandemic situations, which we are facing at some time in the future, and we're preparing to provide programming for that. Most of the time, All three of those are not essential, but when they are, and they all three are, so I beg to defer that. The bill before us purports to provide assurance that these vitally significant information services will not be affected. But as the saying goes, the devil is in the details, but unfortunately there are only limited details in this bill. As has already been stated, with limited time to review this conceptual bill, at first blush it appears to inadequately address funding for PEG and other local franchising issues. In closing, the City of St. Paul welcomes competition, but this bill does not get us any closer to competition for everyone, and appears to miss the mark in providing localities with sufficient funding to provide PEG and address right-of-way management and consumer protection issues. Our current state statute, perhaps one of the best in the nation, crafted here, already provides a well-established process to ensure the provision of video competition without reducing benefits to anyone. The City of St. Paul would love to sit down with Quest or Frontier or any other provider and negotiate a video franchise. Our door is open, and we're willing to work together to provide these valuable services to everyone in St. Paul. We need a bill to do it. We do not need a new bill to do it. We just need them to come to see us. And in closing, my final comment, I was thinking about this on the way here this morning. If one of my sons came to me and said, "Dad, I don't like the way this works." And I said, "Well, have you tried to make it work yet?" "No, I just don't like the way it's going to work." "Well, then why don't you go try it first, son, and see if it works? And then if it doesn't work, come back and see me." That's what we're proposing. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Reardon. And we're going to hold off on questions. Write them down in your tablets if you have them, because you'll probably be here next week and you can answer them
there. I will be, sir. Thank you.
Okay. One last thing before we adjourn here, folks. If you wish to testify, please email or call Elizabeth Emerson here, and she will get you on the list. As you can see, there's a lot of complex issues here to be looked at and resolved and talked about, and we're on our way. So thank you for your attention, and we'll see you next week. Meeting's adjourned.